You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio and also live streaming on Instagram. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you break free from body shame, binging, and diets that don't work. And by the way, I am wearing my Star Wars shirt. May the Fourth be with you. Whoo! Yes, I love Star Wars. Those of you who have been listening for a while know that Star Wars, the original Star Wars, is my favorite movie. I think all life can go back to Star Wars. There are so many lessons there. I digress. Let's go back to the topic. So look, I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. And if you would like to join me today, oh, it's going to be a fun show. I can tell that already. If you would like to join me today, the call-in number is 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is eating at you and weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. It's what's eating at you. Wondering the same thing about the TEDx talk. What are you wondering? Christina is texting me on Instagram. By the way, the TEDx talk, it was a month ago, but it will, hopefully it will be posted in the next 2 to 4 weeks. They were editing it, and then I guess it gets posted by TED, and I have no idea what the process is for that, but hopefully it will be soon. They tell me it'll be like in the next, in 2 to 4 weeks after it's edited. So believe me, I will let you know for sure when that TEDx talk is available. All right, so I have had so many questions about this one topic. So many questions. So I want to tell you what this question is and then answer it, which is, hey, what's the deal? What's the deal with intermittent fasting? So here's the deal with intermittent fasting. Take it from a dietitian and a lot of scientists. All right. So, this is from Brittany Jones Nutrition Group. She is a dietitian. And by the way, not a nutritionist. Anyone could be a nutritionist. I could be a nutritionist. You could be a nutritionist. Zane, who's not here, my dog could probably be a nutritionist. Any trainer could be a nutritionist. Any person can call themselves a nutritionist. However, to be a dietitian, you have to be very well-trained. Usually they have a master's degree in nutrition, and they have to take, you know, clinical boards. So if anyone says, hey, I'm a nutritionist, I can help you. No, you only want to take advice from a registered dietitian, an RD. So, and Brittany Jones is one of those people. So let me share. Okay. I didn't see that Josh had asked when the TEDx would be posted. I'm not seeing everything on Instagram. So thanks for clarifying. I will let you know. Believe me, I will let you know. Okay, so here is an article that Brittany wrote. It is called 5 Reasons Intermittent Fasting is a Fad Diet and Not a Lifestyle Change. And I have more of this to go, but let's go with these 5 reasons. So as you know, intermittent fasting has become very, very popular. Largely due to social media influencers and celebrities and TV shows and books that are promoting what really is a trend. And of course, whenever a new diet trend comes out, and yes, intermittent fasting is a diet, a fad diet. It is not scientifically based in all the stuff that you might hear. It is a fad diet. And that's why I want to tell you guys some of the evidence of why I don't promote intermittent fasting. Listen, some people can do intermittent fasting and they love it and it doesn't cause any problems for them. fine. If that's you, go in peace, right? Peace be with you. I'm channeling my Star Wars. So if however, you're thinking about intermittent fasting or you've tried it, I have to tell you that it is physically and psychologically, it is often very unhealthy. So what is intermittent fasting for those of you who've been maybe in a coma for the last couple of years and you don't know what it is, or you've heard about it, but you just don't know what it really sounds like? It kind of sounds like to me, you stop eating at night and you don't eat until the next day. That's kind of called, you know, breakfast is actually break fast. That's called normal life. And someone packaged it and turned it into a trend, but it's a little more than that. I'm being slightly facetious. Okay. So intermittent fasting tells you when you can't eat instead of what you can't eat. That's really what makes it very different. And intermittent fasting is defined as periods of voluntary abstinence from food and drink, and it is an umbrella term for several different forms of fasting. So here are the different forms of intermittent fasting. Complete alternate day fasting involves alternate days of fasting, so literally no food one day, only water, within eating days. So, you don't eat anything for a couple of days, and then you eat whatever you want. So that's complete alternate day fasting. Modified fasting says you can have like 20 to 25% of what you would normally eat on a fasting day, and then you standard eat on the other days. And that's the 5-2 diet. So it involves severe calorie restriction for 2 non-consecutive days a week and no restricted eating the other 5 days. Ugh, isn't this complicated? All right. And then time-restricted eating, which is, I think, what most people now think of as intermittent fasting. It allows you to have food within a specific window of time. So the most popular time is like you stop eating at night, like say after 6 or 7, and then you don't eat again for 16 hours. So those are the kinds of intermittent fasting that people are talking about. So here are the reasons, according to this dietitian, and also a lot of her, what she is saying is not just off the top of her head. It's not just what she thinks. She references a lot of scientific research studies. So this is based in science, what I'm about to tell you. So first of all, intermittent fasting is not a magic pill. People say, oh, but it improves your blood glucose. It improves your lipid levels. It makes you have less, insulin sensitivity, things like that. Well, most studies on intermittent fasting have been done on animals, not humans, animals over a short period of time, measuring glucose numbers rather than long-term results. So it has long been known that a reduction of weight among overweight people decreases blood glucose levels and triglycerides and blood pressure. So anytime you eat less, yeah, you're going to change those blood glucose levels. The quote-unquote mechanism for the improved lab values seen with intermittent fasting is driven from the weight loss produced by caloric deficit. In other words, you eat fewer calories, you lose weight, those levels change, and then it's attributed to fasting rather than just weight loss. But any kind of weight loss would produce these numbers. So keep in mind that for long-term improvements in lab values, you have to be able to sustain this lifestyle. If you're only able to follow it for 3 months, your lab values are going to return to where they were before the diet. And it is not, this is not a sustainable lifestyle change and can lead to the diet cycle. What we would call the diet binge cycle. Dieting is a setup for binging. You diet, you restrict, and then for reasons that are both psychological and physiological, you end up binging. So she says that when people ask about intermittent fasting or any kind of fad diet, what she says is, hey, is this something you'd like to do for the rest of your life? And even the research acknowledges the difficulty of intermittent fasting due to, as they put it, periods of elevated hunger on fast days and more. I'm not going to go into the science stuff. So it's difficult for people, even people in the studies, to stick to intermittent fasting for a long period of time. And it doesn't allow flexibility. What if you go to a wedding? What if you go on vacation? What if you have brunch with your friends? So it doesn't allow for just living your life. And there are other reasons besides, but we'll get to those. So intermittent fasting and all fad diets, pay attention to this. This is so important. End up leading to the diet binge cycle. The inevitable slip up happens. You mess up, you do whatever, and you feel guilty for breaking your food rules. And then you end up, oh, the day is ruined anyway. So you end up overeating and eating all the things you wouldn't typically let yourself have because of all that guilt. And eventually you give up. This is too much. And, you know, the cycle continues. Then you go on the next fad diet. And of course it continues. So that is what leads to yo-yo dieting. Also, intermittent fasting doesn't teach you anything about the composition or nutritional value of food. It only focuses on the timing of when you're eating, and it ignores the most important aspect of nutrition, which is, what are you eating? Is it healthy? Now, again, this is not to do with binge eating, which is mostly psychologically based. This has to do with, hey, you know, how can you make healthy food choices if you're not being taught about healthy food choices or learning how to eat intuitively, right? You're just going to be like, I can only eat during this time and then I have to not eat at all. So you have to really learn about what kind of foods are good for your body, what foods make you feel well, and so forth. All right, and here's a big one. Intermittent fasting causes you to ignore your body's natural hunger cues. Now, everyone has fasted for a period of time, whether it's like, you know, you skip lunch because you're busy, or which is actually would be called fasting, or you just, you know, for whatever reason, you don't get food, whether it's accidental or on purpose. And you know what happens? You get hungry, you get hangry, your mood changes, you stop being able to think. At least I stop being able to think. I lose my words. Other people feel faint. I mean, there are all kinds of ways that our bodies tell us that we need food. And when you do intermittent fasting, it decreases. This is some good science here right now. Okay. Forcing hunger over and over again is neither sustainable nor healthy. Research shows that food restriction, which is what intermittent fasting is, decreases baseline dopamine levels and enhances a higher dopamine release in the brain when you do eat, which can lead to overeating. So this means that when you're fasting, you feel terrible. And when you finally eat, you feel better and you may eat more, leading to potentially even to binging. So an important part of being healthy and having a sustainably good relationship with food is creating a sense where you are in tune with your body. That is what that's when you recognize what does your body need and how much. And this is you can only do this once you've dealt with the psychological reasons you're binge eating. But eventually, and it is possible, you want to be able to do intuitive eating, which means to intuit what does your body need at that moment and to give it to yourself. And if you're thinking, well, my body is going to intuit that it needs pizza or candy, no, That is not intuitive eating. Intuitive eating is, okay, do I need protein? Do I need vegetables? And your body actually, when you are tuned in, it will tell you. Of course, you can only do this once you've dealt with the psychological aspects of binging. So also people who do intermittent fasting often skip breakfast as a way to elongate their fasting. And according to the Academy of Nutrition and Diabetics, skipping breakfast is associated with higher BMI and increased obesity risk. So therefore, no bueno. Also, and this is where I come in, it can lead you to have a very unhealthy relationship with food and put you at risk for having an eating disorder, if not make an already existing eating disorder worse. One of the biggest concerns that people have with intermittent fasting is exactly this. You get so focused on food that you end up, more, it becomes rigid and you get focused on food. What are you eating? What are you not eating? Instead of what's eating at you? Why are you eating? Let's see. She says, if someone that is driven by the number on the scale or the desire to look thin starts to restrict eating to 16 hours a day and sees positive results, quote unquote, it can lead to fasting even longer and longer and longer, which becomes anorexia, or it's deprivation. What I would say is it creates such deprivation that leads to binging. The experience of deprivation or the anticipation of deprivation always leads to binging. If you think you can't have something, you're going to want it more. And when you do have it, you're going to have more of it because you have that sense of, okay, well, I've already had this, I've already ruined the day. I might as well ruin it more. And then you have a binge. So it is not good. So that's a very more of a scientific perspective on why intermittent fasting is actually quite harmful and not helpful. There are lots of other articles about why intermittent fasting is bad. Here's another one from Newsweek, 5 reasons why you should not try intermittent fasting. And they talk about how actually intermittent fasting can disrupt your sleep. That can, when you have less good sleep, that affects your cortisol level. Your cortisol level as impacts weight gain and all of that. So, in other words, it's not good. Intermittent fasting can lead to muscle loss. This is a good one. It's also from Newsweek. So metabolism is a little bit more complex than the breakdown of your fat reserves while you're sleeping. So your body burns a combination of fats and carbs. And after about 6 hours, when there aren't enough carbs because you're fasting, the ones stored in your liver have been depleted. Yes, you begin to convert some lean tissue into carbohydrates. And so therefore, you will actually lose muscle, which is not good. I could go on and on, but you get the idea. Just one last thing about cortisol. Depriving yourself of food for an extended period of time can increase levels of cortisol, the body's stress hormone. So whatever positive health benefits you may experience through intermittent fasting or hope to have will actually be negated by your increased stress levels. And by the way, you may not feel stressed, but your body knows that it's stressed. Josh, you say my next book should be on anorexia. No, I specialize in binge eating, but in this book that I wrote, that I just happen to have right there, Food for Thought, I do cover anorexia at length. So thanks for the thought. Already did it. It's already done. Not a whole book, but a lot of a book. Okay. So high cortisol levels are also associated with fat storage, so you may lose weight the first few months of intermittent fasting, but it is not advisable in the long run because you'll just get the weight back in fat after you stop intermittent fasting. Fasting can be extremely tiring. You'll have lower energy levels, and then you're going to want to rest and not exercise. That's no good. So, in other words, intermittent fasting is not a great, it's a bad diet, fad diet, and it is not a great choice in the long term. And those are just a couple of articles that I pulled from, you know, experts in this area off the internet. You can find that information as well, and I'm happy to post that too if you're interested, because it's a fad. It's a diet. It's a fad. Fad diets never work in the long run. And by the way, this is the $60 billion diet industry wants us to go on diets and wants us to fail, because we go on diets, we eventually fail. We go off diets, then they sell us some more diets. So it's not good. Okay. So these are some, I have some questions. This is from Shayla. She says, I tend to worry so much. Oh, by the way, if you want to join me, 323-203-0815, I'd love to talk with you about whatever is going on with you and how that relates to what's going on with eating and food. Shayla says, I tend to worry so much about what other people think of me. It can be debilitating. I was listening to a video of yours, of you talking about how you had gotten over that. What's the secret? Well, Shayla, I'm not sure which video you're talking about. I have so many videos out there, but I will tell you the secret. Basically, when we think about what other people are thinking of us, we're generally not thinking, oh, they think we're so awesome. They like us. They just love us. They think we're so nice and they want to get to know us. No, we're generally thinking, oh, hi, Carly Gash. Hold on. I'll be right with you. They're generally thinking the worst, right? What do you think that they are thinking? Whatever it is you think people are thinking, it's often what we are thinking of ourselves. That's projection. So we think, oh my God, I'm so big. I'm such a mess. I'm unlikable. So then we see people looking at us and we think, oh, they're thinking I'm so big. I'm such a mess. They don't like me. We put our thoughts into other people and back onto us. If you've been listening to me for any length of time, you've heard this story already, but I will share it because you can't hear it enough. And if you're new to me, then you need to hear it. So I was treating a singer who had terrible stage fright. So terrible. And Carly Gash, I'll be right with you. Hold on. So terrible that she could not go on tour. It was debilitating. She would think, oh my God, the audiences hate me. They don't think I sound as good as I sound on the radio. They think I look fat. They think that horrible things that she would think. She was very self-conscious. It was debilitating, just like for you, Shayla. And so we realized that the thoughts she thought the audience was thinking were actually her own self-judgments. When we worked on her relationship with herself, and looked at where did those judgments come from, how can we challenge them and create new ways of thinking about herself so that she actually felt comfortable with herself, she liked herself, she appreciated herself. Guess what? She went on tour and all went well. And here's the best part. Love this part. She called me and she said, oh my God, it's going so well. I think different people are coming to my shows. They love me. No, different people were not coming to her shows. The difference was, whereas before she had projected her own judgmental thoughts into the audience back at her and felt so self-conscious, now she was projecting her own positive benign, supportive thoughts about herself into the audience back at her. So one of the things that we need to do to change being self-conscious is to really think, well, are the things that we're self-conscious of what we think, and then challenge that, and also to be an observer, what do you think, not what do people think of you? What do you think of others, not what are others thinking of you, which are anyway probably your own mean thoughts. Okay, Carly Gash, welcome back.
Hi, Dr. Nina.
Hi, Carly Gash.
Hi. Recently, like this weekish, about 2-3 days, I stopped binging. I stopped using food to soothe myself. Sometimes I used to use food for like just get new taste and stuff, but then I remembered your words that we sometimes use food for fun. And when that happened, I said, and you should see my fridge. It's all filled with different condiments, different tastes. I looked at my fridge and I said, I really am trying to substitute all the aspects of my life with food. That's not how it's going to work. So I said, I cannot fix it with just eating something new. I need to have fun. So I'm thinking how to bring fun in my life. And this is such an interesting feeling, Dr. Nina, not to binge. I'm not sure how long it's going to last. It's not that I want to negate it, but I have tendency to kind of, you know, go back and forth, but I feel like a positive trend. And so as a result of this change, I started doing things I like. So I took a lesson in music production with a very good teacher I was wanting to take lessons from. He's very, like, good. And I started sabotaging it. So he gave me 3 days to do my homework. I didn't do it. It took me 5-6 days just to boil in my thoughts. I didn't work. I was just procrastinating until yesterday. I kind of started using your thoughts and what you taught me this years as my support. I started self-soothing. I guess I used very. I said, of course, I'm sabotaging. I am finally getting what I've been waiting for like 30 years since I was a kid, getting back in touch with music. I'm anxious because previous patterns were like my family used to take music from me, or people, like, they wanted me to work but not to do what I like. So I said, of course, it's going to be, it is like challenging right now and not smooth, because I'm just learning how to do it the way I want to do it. And it takes time. So there was a lot of comparison going on. I started comparing, as you like, as I used to do myself with people. Wait, like, I'm
Carly Gash, late,
like I'm older and people get it at younger age.
Carly Gash, hold on. You started doing very, and please don't, like, if I cut in, please listen. You started doing very, but I want to note that you then went on a different direction. So very is a way of comforting ourselves with words, and you started doing it, and you were talking about how you were doing it, validating and acknowledging, of course, it's hard for you. You understand why you were sabotaging. And then you went in, and then you, but you stopped the reassure and the reassuring part. So I wanted to stop you because you went from supporting yourself and comforting yourself to then going in a whole different direction back to self-sabotage. So stay with acknowledging and validating.
This is very interesting, Dr. Nina. When I come to reassurance, our psychic is so interesting, my psychic. So I digressed trying to explain how I compared myself, and I also actually used very in comparison. But again, for some reason, I stop at reassurance part, and I am very curious why I do so. Trying to remember what was going on. I think I know what happened. I think when I was a kid, and my family reassured me, or teachers, they never gave me time to process new information. They always wanted the result right away. Like in a little like gaslighting, not even a little, in a gaslighting form, like, well, we're explaining to you, duh, why don't you get it? You know, but teaching and learning is a process. My brain needs to adapt and process information and make sense of it inside. So I was never given time. I think that's why I avoid reassurance. Yeah, I do have unpleasant feelings when I start reassuring myself. Like, I got better at acknowledging, validating. When it comes to reassurance, yeah, you're right. I avoid it, like, or I do it reluctantly or like very quickly, you know, so I don't register it. I see that's the thing. I'll think about it. So I can just reassure myself without.
Carly, gosh, one thought I have about that is that if you reassure yourself and you're kind and loving to yourself, you could get in touch with, on some level, how you weren't reassured, how no one was there for you. And you know, it's bittersweet because on the one hand, you're giving yourself something kind. It's interesting that my word is sweet. You're giving yourself something sweet. You're being sweet to yourself. And I know one of your things is sweet. So I'm registering how I'm picking up on that kind of in an unconscious way. That as you give yourself sweet words, it can put you in touch with all the words that you never got, which is so painful that then you can't stay.
You are right, Dr. Nina. I think I think that's the thing too. Because if I start being kind to myself and reassuring myself, it's another level to open up, another level, huge level of anger to open up for me and to process and process the anger. It's honestly very unpleasant for me, but I'm learning to do so. Yeah, I think I avoid getting in touch with anger for what I haven't for all the reassurance I haven't received. And honestly, Dr. Nina, I was worthy of that reassurance. I am so smart, and I was such a smart kid. If only like I just received a bit of reassurance, which I guess almost every kid and person needs. And I'm very angry. Why in the world nobody gave it to me, or they were not consistent? I know it's not fair. Like, my family was not capable of doing it. Teachers did their best, but it doesn't negate my pain. You know, this explanation doesn't take my pain away. The failed results of which I have. It's not that I'm blaming people for me not succeeding. I'm explaining it to myself in the first place, and in order to create change, like you say. So, and active.
Carly, gosh, that's great. And I want to add, it's great that you're having this level of self-reflection, but I want to add something else, which is that in addition to anger, which is an active emotion and is, you know, sometimes can, you may be afraid of your anger, but maybe anger is less scary than sadness. Sometimes our anger can disguise our sadness, which is a passive emotion.
Sad, Doctor.
Yes.
Sorry. Well, if I remove, like you said, the first layer of anger, the sadness will be there. And sadness is hard to deal with. Like, do I just use very to deal with sadness?
No. That actually takes me to my another question, which is, what is the overall best way to self-soothe? Or does everyone have a way that works best for them? So look, first, you have to identify your emotions. And if you can't, use the food mood formula. Carly, gosh, I know you're very good at identifying your emotions. But for people who are like, I don't know why I'm eating that, I have no willpower. Well, That's why I developed my food mood formula. If you don't have it, by the way, you can get it on my website. It's free. Or it's in my book where I explained it at length. So Carla Gash, I'm partly doing this for you and partly doing this for others who are not as advanced as you. So you got to identify what you're feeling, and you may need the food mood formula for that. Carla Gash, you're identifying that you feel both anger and sadness, almost anguish, right? Then you have to express those feelings. So it's not enough just to identify it and say, wow, I'm really angry. Wow, I'm really sad. I'm so upset. That's identifying it. Expressing it is, I am so angry because of this. And I'm so sad because of that, you know, like, and notice how my voice just changed. We don't want to just use words. We want to use affect. We call emotions feelings because we feel them in our body. We cry or we feel tense or, you know, our heart starts beating fast when we're mad or anxious. We feel our feelings. We have to actually feel the emotions and not just identify them. And that's where we have to, that's why, you know, as you know, Carla Gash, page 45 through 47 in my book, The Binge Cure, are all prompts to help you express it. You just finish the prompts. So I'm so aggravated because, or I'm so despondent because of this or that, like whatever it is, sadness, loneliness, anger, guilt, shame, whatever it is that you're feeling, you have to express it and then use very.
Got it. I opened the page 45 and it says, give sadness a voice. I'm feeling down because when that, and I'm going to do this. I understood why dealing with sadness was hard for me, because I didn't get in touch with sadness. I used to jump right away to very without expressing sadness first, because I was never taught to express sadness. I mean, you taught me in classes, but you know how my brain kind of gets used to it, like layer by layer, chuckling away.
Finish this one. I'm hurt
that I was not giving as a promising kid what I was supposed to be given in terms of being taught music or any other school subjects, because I'm dyslexic and because I have a broken family and had to work to provide for myself. And for that reason, I was left behind and I didn't form those necessary habits and skills of learning like in a proper way without like anxiety. It hurts me very much. It's very painful. And I'm so responsible for my results too. I will do this. I will get it. But it hurts me a lot that I was not given what I was supposed to give as a kid. That's not fair. It hurts me a lot because I'm very ambitious and I want it and I will get it. But it could have been easy. It doesn't have to be this hard.
Carla Gash, I want to say something to you, that your hurt turned into anger. That you, like, your hurt, exactly. Hurt is, oh, it's so painful that I wasn't given a chance. It's so sad. I feel really bad. I feel really sad that I wasn't helped, you know? Which you said it, but you said it in an angry way. So I'm really picking on you a little bit, Carla Gash, just to show how easy it is.
You're doing so good and I'm receiving it perfectly. Thank you so much. Let's do it.
And it does is show how scary it is to feel sad. So I'm going to do a little very on you. I see that it's hard for you to feel sad. And of course, let me do it. I see that it's hard for you to feel sad. It's very hard for you to feel vulnerable and sad. Of course it is. Being vulnerable in your family and in your country wasn't safe. So it's scary to be vulnerable. We understand that. And now reassurance, you are learning that you can be vulnerable and still be safe. My friend Andy used to say, hey, vulnerability is sticking your face out and maybe you're going to get slapped and maybe you're going to get kissed, but you're willing to, you're willing to risk the slap in order to get the kiss. You are, and so you are learning, to slowly but surely trust vulnerability. And that's going to help you tolerate these feelings so that you don't have to eat something sweet. You can give yourself some sweet words.
Exactly. Thank you, Dr. Nina. You know, I figured out why I turned from sadness to anger. Like you said, I'm learning to express sadness. And I remembered when I was a kid, like pretty much throughout my whole life, when I was expressing sadness, I would receive reactions and responses like that. So what? Everyone is suffering. You are no better. Or like, it's not a big deal. Or like, suck it up, make it, still make it. You have to have, like, I haven't received like proper warm response to my sadness. So nobody basically created me a safe space to express my sadness. But I will learn to do so. Can I try one more time, express my sadness? Because I want to do it.
Yes.
So I feel really sad for that. I'm really struggling to express my sadness. It's, it really sucks. And, you know, I don't like this, that I am in a way crippled because not being able to, I'm not criticizing myself. I'm stating a fact. It really stops a lot of things in my life, not being able to express my sadness. I am blocked as a person, as a creative person, and it stays in my way. And I am, it's just sad that nobody taught me to get in touch with my feelings and express sadness. And now as an adult, I see it's possible. It's not some hard thing or it's possible. And I wish I got this information earlier. I wish somebody taught me to do so earlier.
You're learning now. So I'm proud of you for going out on those skinny branches. And I'm proud of you for going out on the skinny branches, as it were, you know, for doing something daring and challenging yourself. And practice makes progress. So, you know, keep practicing.
I still don't feel like I got in touch with it completely, with sadness, but I will keep doing it. I will keep working on it.
Okay, Carly Gash. Well, now you're more aware of how you convert sadness to anger, so you can stay with the sadness. And remember, the sad feeling you have, all that you will survive. Whatever it is that you are going to feel, feelings don't kill people and they don't make people into pathetic people. They don't make you pathetic. They make you human. So some parting words to think about, and let me know how it goes next week.
Thank you very much. This was very important. Being sad and expressing my sadness doesn't make me pathetic. It makes me human, because I've been told that I'm pathetic if I express my sadness. I think that's the roadblock I need to think about. Thank you very much, Dr. Nina.
All right. You're welcome, Carly Gash. Bye for now. Yeah, that idea that you're pathetic if you cry or if you have certain feelings, you know, that's what men are often taught, right? They're taught, hey, you know, boys don't cry. That's why a lot of guys convert anything sad or vulnerable into anger. And a lot of women, unlike Carly Gash, I mean, again, this is not a gender, it's not all people, it's just sort of for many, many people, women are taught, don't be angry, don't be an angry person, that's not nice. Girls don't get angry. Well, then you see a lot of women and girls who express their sadness their anger as sadness. So they'll start saying, oh, I'm so upset at this, and they'll end up crying. So they convert their anger into sadness. Carly Gash was doing the opposite. She was converting her sadness into anger. Anger is a strong, active emotion. Passivity and is associated with sadness. And as she was just saying, like she was basically taught, hey, if you're sad, you're pathetic. So how could you possibly want to be sad if you feel pathetic by just by the very virtue of having those feelings and expressing them? So just a recap, what is the overall best way to self-soothe? First, you identify your emotions. And by the way, you may think you know what you are feeling, but you may be wrong, or you may not have a single idea. And it may feel as if you are a food addict, that you just are inexorably drawn to the refrigerator. Like the Millennium Falcon is into the Death Star. There's my May the Fourth Be With You reference. You might feel like, you know, resistance is futile. No, if you are feeling drawn like that, there is a reason. And that reason is out of your awareness. So that's why I created my food mood formula. Why is it out of your awareness? Because we don't want to feel uncomfortable feelings. So we go right to food before we're even aware that we are triggered. Something is going on. Something is going on. Be curious, not critical, and you will discover what that something is. That's where my food mood formula comes in. So use that to identify what it is that you are actually feeling. And by the way, if you're like, well, I have to have some ice cream with nuts in it. Like, can't have ice cream if it doesn't have nuts. Well, then smooth and creamy, primary food is ice cream. Smooth and creamy is associated with need for comfort. And nuts are associated with forms of anger, annoyance, frustration, irritation, rage. So you want to express both. How do you comfort yourself? What part of you needs comforting? Are you sad? Are you lonely? Are you feeling scared? What's going on that you need the comfort? And what's going on that's pissing you off? Again, express those feelings. If you have my book, go to page 45 through 47. Express your feelings. And then respond to yourself using the very technique and everything else in my chapter 3, for those of you who have my book, where I really teach you how to talk to yourself in a different way. Because ultimately, we need comfort words and not comfort food. Comfort words, not a distraction, not taking a walk, not taking a bubble bath, not brushing your teeth, not going and doing something else. Those are all distractions. Sooner or later, you have to express what it is that you are feeling. You have to express it. The only way to get rid of feelings is to feel them. If taking walks and taking bubble baths and brushing our teeth were enough to stop people from binging, people would be very clean and have nice shiny teeth all the time and wouldn't even think about that. No, it doesn't work. And mantras don't work either. You can't positive think yourself out of upsetting feelings. So identify your emotions, express your emotions, and then comfort yourself with words, which the very technique which I demonstrated with Carly Gash, validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. By the way, you can also use it to vary your response to other people. You can validate, acknowledge, and reassure them. It works in so many situations. And you know, the tone of voice that we use also matters. You know, I've talked a lot, maybe you've heard me, about the person who said that they talked to themselves and it didn't work at all. So I said, okay, well, what did you say to yourself and how did you say it? And person said, well, I said, this is hard, but I'm going to get through it. I'll be okay. Well, of course, they didn't feel better. Would you say that to a friend? Yeah, this is hard, but you're going to get through it. You'll be okay. Like, that wouldn't make anyone feel better. No, no. The tone of voice also has a huge dimension to this. So you can use the same words and they can sound completely different. Like, you could say, this is hard, but I'm going to get through it. I'll be okay. Same words, totally different feeling. Which one would make you feel better if someone said it to you? Which one would make you feel better if you said it to yourself? Right? So it's not just the words we say, which are so important, but also how we say them. How we say them is so, so important. And that does it for the Dr. Nina Show today. Thank you so much for joining me here. I'm here every Wednesday live on LA Talk Radio and Instagram at 11 a.m. Pacific. And you can also listen later on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get podcasts. And if you like the show or you enjoy it, please take a moment to head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and or a review. It would mean so much to me. Thank you so much. Stay curious, not critical. I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.